Hi, I'm Seth Gumery, and this is Rebuilding the American Dream. In this podcast, we introduce you to thought leaders who are shaping the lives of the next generation to discuss the challenges and innovations influencing higher education and how we can adapt to give students a strong foundation for their futures. Today, we are speaking with Dr. Tom Stridicus, president of Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado. He came to FLC in August of 2018 and began implementing strategies to advance higher education in Colorado. Prior to his position as president, he was a deputy director of K-12 education at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the dean of the University of Washington College of Education. President Stridicus earned his doctorate in language, literacy, and culture at the University of California, Berkeley. As a scholar, his work examined the effects of bilingual education policy and teacher practice on the academic lives of Latino and Asian immigrants. He served on the Global Learning Initiative, building a strategy to improve education in sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. In addition to his work in global education, Dr. Stridicus spent 3 years leading work in improving education in the United States, where he oversaw initiatives of personalized learning, assessment for student learning, instructional leadership, and teacher preparation. President Stridicus, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you've had a sort of remarkable career in higher education, leadership and innovation, both inside the university and outside the university as well. Could you share a little bit about your background, but mostly really focus on what are the experiences that led you here to Fort Lewis? Why now leading an institution? And what are some of the learnings from earlier in your career that helped to make you successful every day?
I began my work in public school, in education as a public school teacher in Baltimore in the early 90s. And I think from that time was really focused on what happens when institutions get it right and what happens when institutions get it wrong. What's the cost of failure and what are the benefits of success? And Baltimore in the early 90s was the stark example of that. So from early in my career, I've really been focused on that and really the amazing potential that young people bring and the cost when adults don't get it right. And so that's been sort of the guiding principle in my entire career as an ed school dean at University of Washington, at the Gates Foundation, which was an incredible place to work with amazing colleagues. But what led me to Fort Lewis was really the desire to be on the ground with the real problems and the real issues faced by students, you know, not in a particularly amazingly resourced place. Fort Lewis is a access institution. It's an amazing place, but we're not a rich institution by any means, but our students are amazing. And for me, I think showing students or just engaging with students around what quality leadership looks like, what committed leadership looks like, even when we get it wrong, is just really important for me.
You mentioned coming to Fort Lewis and you're sort of nestled into an amazing place in the country, right? In the southwest of Colorado. What sort of sets Fort Lewis apart from the other institutions that you know in the area or nationally? And what role does it play being in that community, in that sort of rural place in Colorado?
Yeah, I like to try to impress upon people who have spent most of their time on the coast. We're 3.5 hours away from the nearest Trader Joe's. So just to put that in context, for those of you who have spent your life on the West and the East Coast, it just helps kind of bring it home. We're an isolated place, half resort town, half kind of real economy, but amazingly so, we're a stone's throw away from the indigenous nations, Southern Ute, Ute Mountain Ute. We're only about an hour and a half away from the Navajo Nation. So our proximity to rural issues, our proximity to indigenous issues, our proximity to really the issues facing the West, water, education, economic development, cost of housing. These are all the things that are going on, you know, in the backyard of Fort Lewis that create just a rich tapestry for our students in a stunning location. I hope our podcast listeners will Google Fort Lewis. You'll be blown away. Then you won't even think about Trader Joe's. You'll be like, this is awesome.
So being where you are, how does being surrounded, you know, with a large indigenous population around you, how does that impact the learning community for the students? How does that impact the life for students on campus?
Yeah, maybe even backing up one before that, Fort Lewis was originally a military fort in Pagosa Springs, a town about 60 miles east of here. that was created right after the Sand Creek Massacre, when the colonists were worried about retribution. So our history is steeped in the colonization of the West and really cultural genocide of indigenous people. So for all that we do, it's a really contradictory history. Fort Lewis then moved west and became a boarding school, a federal Indian boarding school. Listeners might not be fully aware, but in a nutshell, the federal Indian boarding schools were a really horrible chapter in American history, where Native students were forcibly removed from their families and sent to schools to essentially, you know, forcibly assimilate them into American culture. Through that legacy, we are one of two schools in the nation that provides tuition-free attendance for any Native American student from a federally recognized tribe. University of Minnesota Morris is the other one. So we have this really contradictory history, yet we have been rooted in trying to do the right thing. So those contradictions are with us to this day. That history is with us to this day. And our students really embrace and embody that. We have over 187 tribal nations and Alaskan villages represented in our student population. And nearly 46% of our 3,600 students are Indigenous. So it is amazingly rich and amazingly diverse in that way.
I'm glad that you brought that up and talked about the history. With such a large population there at the school, how now do you work? Are you working with those students and preparing them to continue to serve both their own culture and communities, but also to help sort of bridge a lot of those gaps and take down a lot of those barriers that still exist in society?
Well, I'll give you a couple examples. I think places where we really care about this. One of our amazing partners is the Johnson Scholars Foundation. Johnson Scholars Foundation is one of the largest supporters of Indigenous business, business enterprise in the nation. They've been an incredible supporter for us in terms of scholarship support, intellectual support, because many of the students here want to, they want to get a degree and they want to go back to their home communities and make a difference in their home communities. Our business school is very focused on Native American entrepreneurial issues, advancement to these issues. And we have one of the few tenured faculty in a business school anywhere, Indigenous tenured faculty, in the nation. Similarly, institutionally, we've been really trying to acknowledge that traumatic history, create a sense of well-being and belonging through that acknowledgement, and really open up space for students to have those difficult conversations that exist so they can develop the skills to take them to their home communities if that's what they choose to do.
Glad you brought up the Johnson Scholars. You've been sort of evolving campus facilities to meet the needs of students today, as well as what's coming in the future, right? Which is always hard to predict. What other sorts of partnerships are you creating in order to sort of answer today's higher education challenges? And how are you looking to try and answer sort of the unknown future needs of the workforce?
Yeah, so Fort Lewis is a four-year, largely residential. We'd be in the public liberal arts realm. But one of the things that we did not have was a nursing program. And nurses are in huge demand in rural communities, as well as Indigenous health issues are really pressing for the communities from which our students come. There are a lot of ways that a school could think about that. They could say, hey, let's go out and just build our own nursing program and go through the accreditation and take the 6 years that it takes and do this slow build. And we wanted to do something a little different. So we partnered with CU Anschutz, University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus. They've been incredible partners. And we went to them and said, look, we want to build something unique here. We want to build something that isn't just the classic, okay, we're doing the first 2 years and then you're doing the nursing part. But what would something that combines the work of our faculty around indigenizing the curriculum, around really creating a culturally responsive curriculum for our students with the expertise that your research faculty bring? And it's been an amazing partnership. So we signed an MOU with CU Anschutz. We've already raised a good chunk of philanthropic money to support this partnership. It allows us to use their great expertise, their accreditation, and allows them to think through how they connect with an undergraduate institution largely and learn from the way we have been trying to work to serve our diverse students. So I think that version of partnership where we're thinking about what we each bring together rather than thinking we have to build this thing on our own, for us just made a lot of sense.
I think it's an important model to sort of dive into a little bit, that as we think of a lot of smaller regional institutions, we don't necessarily have the time, one, to launch a program and go through that whole process, right, in order to meet future needs, that delays our time span. But also, as you talked about, the resources, how do we do this on our own without a partnership? Can you talk a little bit about how internally you think about identifying those areas? Obviously, nursing is something you have of great need, but as you look to other spaces, are there any ways internally that you and your team look at, okay, this is how we identify potential, you know, future opportunities and future partners?
Yeah, thanks for that question. I mean, I think one of the things about the small regional institutions is we're stretched really thin. If you look at, Fort Lewis, we've reduced. When I came here, I think we had 5 vice presidents. We're down to 3. You know, very intentionally trying to shrink the bureaucracy. We don't need to be a mini Research One institution. We're a student-serving 4-year institution, so we can look and feel differently. We can be more nimble. But with that, you have to think about partnership creatively. And rather than just thinking of, hey, people want to partner with us because we're small or we're nimble or we're diverse, what are the unique things about Fort Lewis that we have to offer? And how do we combine that with another institution that has something that we don't have to be able to best serve our students? Another example would be in Durango, rural remote area, there aren't pools of adjuncts sitting around as there might be in Boston or San Francisco or Seattle. So we partnered with CU Boulder this time. Again, the CU system's been a great partner here, to create a teaching fellowship. They were able to advertise it to their PhD students as, hey, go to an institution that really cares about teaching, go to an institution that cares about diversity, and learn those skills, take the research skills that you've honed here at CU Boulder. And we have been able to attract some incredible talent, talent that we've hired on as full-time faculty who may not have come to us in the first place through that program. So I think the framework here is, you know, what's our unique value proposition, essentially? What are we also receiving from the partner, and where's the interface where there's work happening together rather than just you're the content provider, or, you know, you're creating this program and I'm just driving my students into it. It's what's the interplay between our faculty, your faculty, our students, your students, so that we're learning something together.
I think it's a great framework to look at. Where are your needs, but also where are you strong at? But then as you look at those partnerships, how are you both delivering value to each other is really important. It seems like it's paying some dividends as students are coming to Fort Lewis. I mean, you've got the largest incoming class in like 17 years. What do you attribute to that success in attracting new students? This is a time, obviously, when we're all talking about the demographic cliff and what's going on and how hard it is to be bringing in new students. What do you think you guys are doing right now that's helping towards that success?
Yeah, as you said, we're up 8% in enrollment since the start of the pandemic, which is you know, counter to what a lot of institutions are experiencing. There's a couple things I'd highlight there. First, last year during the 2021 academic year, we were open. We largely 70% of our classes were in person. We did in-person tours on campus. When you know, people came to campus, they're like, "Wow, you're the president and you're here." It's like, "Yeah, we're here." Yeah, you know, we tried to get a tour somewhere else when they only had a video tour. We're like, "Yep, we're all here." And that's really because of our faculty and staff. They are so committed to our students and so committed to the health, well-being, education of our students. We really came together as a community and said, there's going to be some risks. There are no guarantees. We don't have the vaccine yet. This is months ahead of the vaccine. We have a testing program, you know, that we set up, but we want to open because we know that's best for our students. And I think that care and concern and compassion really came through. And as people were making college decisions last year, we heard that from families. It shows a lot that you're open. It shows a lot that you're doing the tour. Secondly, our culture, we really have tried to create a very student-centered campus where students, you know, really have the opportunity to engage with great faculty who are passionate about their work and do it in a fun, you know, environment and do it in an environment where they're doing the things that they love. And this is a beautiful, beautiful place. And then third, you know, our marketing and admissions team, you know, they're amazing. And someone asked me, well, you know, what do you do? I was like, well, basically get out of their way. Let the 35-year-olds who are running, you know, those teams who have a lot of 23-year-olds decide how they want to communicate with young people, and don't have a president in there thinking that they understand messaging and marketing. And so, you know, we really have gotten out of their way and letting them communicate in the way that they think's right, and have done an amazing job.
Connection is so important now, I think, especially during COVID, not to dive into COVID, but in that time when we were so disconnected, that ability to go and see somebody and have that experience is so important. We know in admissions the importance of getting someone to campus and getting you there to potentially see yourself there. Getting into college and going to college that first year is incredibly important first step, right, on that mission, whether it's for working your way up that socioeconomic ladder or getting that skill set that you're looking for. But really, it's about graduating from college that's so important. How are you all approaching that challenge of retention and persistence?
Yeah, from the day I walked through the door, it's been one of our primary foci. Just, you know, our retention rates, particularly with Native American students, are not where we want them to be. Freshman to sophomore, persistence had been hovering around 63, you know, low 60s. First couple of years, we put a ton of things in place, a first year experience, a new advising model. We're able to actually see a 10% gain from first year persistence heading into that pandemic year. It was amazing. The pandemic year kind of washed that stuff out. And our provost has really taken a very comprehensive view on this. We essentially use this concept of a circle where students are getting peer support, faculty support, staff support. And then if they need to leave for family reasons, for cultural reasons, that there's a way to stay connected to us. And that's been one of the blessings of the pandemic. I think we've accelerated some of the hybrid approaches that we've thought about. But we've put in, you know, first year learning experience course, peer tutoring. We, with a Title III grant, were able to redo our library and create an academic hub. So we're doing a ton there that I think is going to be a unique kind of Fort Lewis, very high touch model. I mean, this isn't a big data analytics play. We can kind of put our hands around the 50 kids or 60 students or so that we think are having an issue and where they might be, but really trying to create that nurturing environment for students. I think the thing that we're all struggling with, frankly, is the interface between academic preparedness and mental health. Those are super consequential issues. We do as well as any institution our size. Is it enough? The answer is no. And I think all of us in higher ed are going to need to continue to think about that.
Yeah, I think it's been a fairly common conversation on my end when chatting with folks is one, I don't know if we've seen fully the impact of COVID yet on our student body, right? As we get more students onto campus who went through that time and weren't on campus or were remote or weren't getting enough support there at their high school. Just what does that mean for us in higher education? As you think about that, what are your thoughts on where you're trying to take the university? Mental health is one way to think about it. I think for some of us, maybe that narrows it too much, but just that student mental well-being perspective.
We want to be the most student-centered campus on the planet, and we, in a little bit of a classic presidential platitude, you know, had this plank students at the center in our strategic plan, and presidents are prone to platitudes, so people can make fun of me as they wish. But it's actually something we've lived through difficult times, through a down budget year heading into the pandemic, through the pandemic, and culturally to get the institution to shift, to see all of us to say, wait a minute, you know, if we were serious about students, wouldn't we do this? And I know these are trivial examples, but I think they do matter to our students. When we centralize student services into one spot, which is not that unique, but it wasn't going on here, our vice president of finance and administration said, hey, you know, if we truly believe students at the center, we get rid of all the parking spots that are reserved for administrators in front of that building and make them for drop-in students. And we all agreed. And there are no administrative parking spots on Fort Lewis's campus. None. Not for the president, not for anybody. visitors. There's visitor spots outside, but that's it. And so, you know, that kind of thing, I think, is what we want to do culturally. What we really need to continue to push on is to build a retention model around Native American students that is truly world-class, and to continue to push on the jobs and internship front to make sure that our students are not only graduating, but when they graduate, have that opportunity. And again, lots of stuff, you know, in play. I don't know that it's any more unique than some of the other, you know, people that you hear doing collaborations with, raising money for paid internships, et cetera. But that's really where we want to go.
I love the example of the parking spaces. All of us, most organizations, we put up barriers that we don't normally think of as barriers. And it's a great example of this invisible barrier that, you know, hey, we want easy access, but then we just made you park five spots further away. Maybe just a perfect analogy. Maybe it wasn't really stopping anybody, but it's that right idea of what are the things we haven't thought about before if we are putting the student in the center, and how do we rethink those things? Obviously, degree shirts were very aligned with the outcomes, right? And where are you going afterwards? Just talk a little bit about how in a rural community, do you create partnerships for internships that cover, you know, the areas that your students are interested? How do you make sure that all those students are gaining that experience and seeing the path forward after graduation?
Yeah, I would say that our rurality is probably the most challenging aspect of trying to embed job and internship work into every student's experience. What we've been able to do in the last couple of years is raise philanthropic capital to send diverse students off into high quality STEM fields through some support from the Schusterman Foundation. You know, we had students placed at Kaiser Permanente. We had students placed at big engineering firms. And again, many of these places said, wow, we wouldn't have taken a look at that student, but they're here and they're amazing. So we've raised local money to do internships. Same with some internships out of the Southern Ute Indian Nation as well. But what we haven't done is done that at scale. We don't have the body of employers here to do that. So we're thinking through a couple things. You know, what can happen on campus? You know, kind of like the Brea College model. How can we create some spots, you know, for people on campus? What can happen virtually? You know, in some ways, the pandemic, I think, in our students sort of soured them on all things virtual. You know, they had that one class or that one experience. It's like, that was terrible. So they don't really want to do virtual internships. They want to actually be present. So we're really trying to use all our network, all our resources to connect with as much as we can. But I will say that being in a place that's as remote as we are does make it challenging in a way that if you're in Denver, it's not like we just get to pull together three or four versions of companies and say, hey, we're all here. We just don't have that here.
Yeah, and I think for most of the institutions, we don't, right? You are unique in where you are in the country, but you are not necessarily, not every institution is in a large city. So I think these are the things Correct. That everybody is thinking through, especially as there's more focus from students and parents on, well, what am I doing afterwards? Where am I going afterwards? And creating that close tie. So it's interesting to and great to hear just about the work that you're doing to raise funds, to think about what can we do on campus and how do we utilize the community that we do have. So speaking of the future, when you're talking with your students and you're talking with, you know, someone who's thinking about coming or someone who's just contemplating their future in general, what's the biggest piece of advice you find yourself giving over and over again?
You know, I think it's going to our students and what we're trying to create here. I just met with our student government leaders, you know, they're critical of me on some things and like to partner with me on some things and think some things are great. And that's what we want. If your students aren't critiquing you or if you're not engaging with your students in a way that you're listening and you know, sitting with those critiques, I think we're not doing our jobs as college leaders. So what I tell people is to look for a place that's, you know, willing to talk about what's good, talk about what's not good, and willing to engage you as thought partners in making it better. If someone had figured out mental health on campus, have them come my way. We'd love to just reduplicate what they've done. I think the issue is these are super challenging and difficult topics for which students can play a real leadership role. So for me, I mean, I always leave work every day optimistic that, you know, even if we've made a mistake or even if what we've done isn't perfect, that we're going to engage with our students and try to make it better. So I think that engagement, that connection, respectful connection, even when you're on different sides of an issue, that's what's so important. I think that's what's so needed in society right now. And smaller campus, so maybe it's easier to create than other big campuses, but it's something we've really been striving to create.
So the podcast is called Rebuilding the American Dream. What does the American Dream mean to you?
Yeah, well, my parents were Greek immigrants. They were both born in Greece. My father was a diesel machinist. My mother was a secretary at a university, University of Nebraska. And so, you know, I saw firsthand the role that education plays in social advancement and in broadening horizons. It's not just about a job. It's about challenging assumptions. It's about challenging ideas. It's about engaging with people who are different than you. So to me, the American dream is that. How do we, on what are some of the most diverse places on the planet, college campuses, create an opportunity for students to engage with each other, to engage with leadership, to engage with faculty around the problems and the issues that are central to the American democracy? And there are several. Some places are better to tackle them than others. And creating that space where students can engage in those questions is to me, very much part of advancing the version of the American dream that I care about.
You brought up one thing in there I just wanted to focus in on, right? We're trying to help expand sort of who you are, right, as educational institutions. And that doesn't mean change you, right? We're trying to expose you to different ways of thought and different people and get you those interactions as you grow. Right now, right, there's the narrative of college sort of not necessarily being worth it and worth the cost, right? And I think for a long time, as I was listening to you speak, I think for a long time, it was always that we got to go to college to get the next job. But as you just said, it's not necessarily just about the next job. It's about your growth and building the full person. How do we impact that narrative? What's the role of Fort Lewis? How do we change that marketing machine that for so long we just said, well, if you go to college, you're going to get a better job? That was one of the big things that we all heard in high school.
Gosh, I wish I had the easy answer of how we changed the narrative, but let me just say a couple of things. Through all my time here, I've not been afraid of taking political stances. We've especially when they relate to our students. So we've spoken out about issues in the community. There's a very racist sign in town. I wrote an op-ed about it with our board chair. And you know, every time I send one of these things out, I get an email from students that says, you know, President Sirdikas or Tom or hey, you know, you didn't go far enough. You're part of the problem. And then some who said, what are you doing? You shouldn't be using your role to do this. And my response is always the same. Hey, let's meet for coffee and talk. Let me hear your thoughts and let me share a little bit more about mine. And I think that growth and being committed to that growth and being honest about it for students of color and for a diverse population is really important. So let me give you a place where I think we fall down on the jobs thing. I was with a recent version of CEO kind of roundtable in Denver that we helped host to hear from business what higher ed should be doing. And there was a lot of critique around, hey, we don't, you know, we need this certificate. We don't need them to take the psychology degree. I was moderating the panel and I asked, are any of you calling up your own kids' schools, Rice, Colby, Bates, wherever they're going, and saying, oh yeah, hey, by the way, I don't want to pay for that psych class. I only want to pay for these classes. And the answer is there are none. And so how do we make a broad liberal arts education can't just be the province of the elite? I'll close with a final particular example. Estella Loretto, who's a distinguished alum from Fort Lewis College, amazing sculptor. She has the sculpture outside of the cathedral in Santa Fe. She attributes a lot of her art to her own indigenous upbringing. She came from artists, but she also attributes it to a trip she made to Italy as a student here. She wouldn't have made the things she made had it not been from that.
That's great. I think it's a very difficult question. It's one we're all obviously struggling with currently, but we all know this wonderful value, and I think it's in that time where we're working to try and, you know, help the larger population to see, you know, where it is that we're trying to go and what that is. Well, President Sirdikas, thank you so much for all of your time. It was a pleasure to have you on, and I really hope that we'll be able to connect again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time, and hope people cruise through Durango and come see us at Fort Lewis College. It's an amazing campus.
You've been listening to me, Seth Gumery of Degree Insurance, and this is Rebuilding the American Dream. Find out more on our website, americandream.fm, or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn @DegreeInsurance. Until next time.